corners. First pitch swinging, lifted deep left field. Back goes Olivares. That ball is gone. Zach Short was the right button to be pushed. AJ Hinch knew it, and the Tigers reclaim the lead.
Zach Greinke did what he usually does. Five innings, one run pitching for the veteran right-hander. 20th major league season. Handed over the bullpen, and that's when it all fell apart, as you just heard. A three-run homer. Royals bullpen being depleted. We've been talking about this for a while now, that the Royals have a hard time winning games when their starting pitchers don't go deep into the games. Brady Singer, first game of the series, didn't even get through four. And then Michael Mayers, who's making his first Major League Baseball start, went 4 2/3. Greinke had the longest start with five, but the bullpen wore down. Left-hander Josh Taylor came in, gave up that home run you just heard, just like that. It was a 4-1 game, and that was pretty much it. Vandy Pascatino had three hits, reached base four times. Royals have tonight off. The open series at home tomorrow versus the Nationals. Matt Cottrell, the manager of the Royals, his team had some chances.
We had chances. The guys right to the end. I mean, you get the tying run at the plate. Guys we feel really good about. And, they got the one swing on the home run, and then they added on late, which turned out to be huge.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Royals continue their losing ways. They're 15-36, but yet only 10.5 games out of first, because the American League Central is just not good. The Twins are barely above 500. They lead the division. Hockey last night. Let's get to that real quick, because it was pretty exciting. Came down the final seconds. That was a goal with 4.3 seconds left in regulation. It looked like Carolina and Florida was going to overtime, but not so fast, my friends. The Panthers are the Eastern Conference champions, the eighth seed, who barely made the playoffs this season. We're down 3-1 to the best team in Major Hockey League regular season history, 3-1. Won the next three against the heavily favored Bruins. Won the series in seven. Got past the Bruins. They then got past Toronto, beat them in five. And then last night, their unquestioned leader throughout the playoff run. He's been clutch, two goals in game four, 21 points in 16 games to Chuck. With the game winner, Hurricanes never found a way to slow him down. So Florida moves on to the Stanley Cup Finals, because when you think Florida, you think hockey. And tonight, the Las Vegas Knights, when you think Vegas, you think hockey. Las Vegas Knights go for the sweep of the Stars in Dallas at 7 o'clock tonight on ESPN. Panthers and Knights, it looked like. Florida versus Vegas. On a skating rink. That just, I don't know what that's going to do for the ratings, but Brooks Koepka was there, fired up, looked like he had an all-night bender after he won the PGA the other night when he was in the stands where he never blinked. He was pretty excited. So Florida, the eighth seed, moving on to the Stanley Cup Finals in NHL. And another eighth seed from Florida, the Miami Heat. They're up 3-1, have a chance to close out the Celtics in Boston tonight. Game 5 of that series at 7:30 on TNT. The Celtics are only 4-5 at home. But if the Celtics would win, that would make things very, very interesting, because then the Heat would probably want to feel like they got to close it out in Game 6 back in Miami. Don't want to go to Boston for a Game 7. Celtics are pretty doggone good in their history. Game 7's at home at Boston Garden. So the Heat up 3-1, chance to close it out tonight against the Celtics. Do they do it tonight?
I'm going to say yeah.
You say yes. I'm going to say no. I'm going to say it's going to get a little bit entertaining. I'll say the Heat finish it up in six. The Celtics makes it interesting by winning game five. But I still think the Heat win the series. Celtics trying to do something nobody's ever done in the history of NBA, and that's come back from an 0-3 deficit to win a series. Nobody's ever done it. In NBA, it's happened in hockey. Happened once in Major League Baseball. Remember that, Clover? I think you do. Coming up, K-State baseball team pummeled at the Big 12 tournament. They're in action this morning to stay alive in the Big 12 tournament. KU upsets the number one seed in the tournament. Big news for the KU men's basketball program. Sports gambling. I've been talking about this for a while now. There's a student's survey that came out. The results of this survey are alarming, yet a lot of people still not catching on to the story nationally, although Sports Illustrated now is. And a Big 12 source is telling people that there is a school ready to leave the Pac-12 and join the Big 12 very, very soon. This is something that I mentioned months ago from something that I knew that I can't really say where my sources are coming from, but it seemed to be something that was very, very possible. It was going to happen, in fact, very likely, and we'll talk about the ramifications of that coming up in just a little bit. And if you're a Chiefs fan, you want to keep listening. We're going to hear from Patrick Mahomes about his contract and his philosophy with his contract. It's been we've been saying this over and over and over for so long, and yet, once again, national people don't fully understand. In fact, I think some make up stories. And I think Mike Florio made up a story recently, and he got into it with Howie Roseman, the general manager of the Eagles the other day. He's like, you know, Florio, if there was conspiracy theorists top five list, you'd be in it. It was very interesting. So Mike Florio is not exactly super well liked by some people in the business, but sometimes you just say, oh, yeah, I got sources, and you just throw something out there. And your source is your own brain. That was your source. Or you just wanted to get somebody to click on your story. And I think Mike Florio did that recently. Mm-hmm.
I think
Patrick
he's probably
Mahomes.
Done that plenty of times.
Yes, many, 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 many times. Our local sports, we got athletes of the week. And the boys softball team has a chance to do something they've never done in their school's history. Win a state tournament game later tonight.
Yeah, we'll start first with our athletes of the week. The members of the Lakeside Knights golf team have been named the NCCastSports.com County Game Telephone and Cable Athletes of the Week. They won the Acacia State Sand Greens Golf Championship for the third consecutive season Monday in Leonard. Sophomore Jace Cunningham, the individual state champion, shot a 69 over 18 holes. His teammate, senior Taryn Winkle, took second place with a 72. All five of Lakeside's golfers finished in the top eight. Their top four scores going toward that team total. Eli Hahn and Ross Hudson both shot a 79 in a tie for fifth, while Reed Walsh finished eighth with an 81. And the Knights took the team title by 25 strokes over St. John's, as Lakeside had a score of 299, the Blue Jays at 324 for the day. The title for Lakeside, their fifth in Sand Greens in their school's history. They won in 04, 06, 21, 22, and now 23, as far as state titles are concerned. So again, congratulations to Lakeside, not only on their state championship, but also on being named the NCCastSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athletes of the Week. We'll announce the winners each week, and you can nominate an athlete from any school sport. Yeah, today is the start of the 3A state softball tournament for the Beloit Lady Trojans. As Wade said, the Lady Trojans are looking for their first ever state tournament victory. They made it to the state tournament in 2019, but lost their first round game to Silver Lake. So, again, looking for their first ever win. They'll play at Twin Oaks Complex in Manhattan tonight. They are the number four seed at 20-3. Facing number five seed Santa Fe Trail, which comes in at 19-3. More on that momentarily. First pitch is set for 7 o'clock tonight in field number one. And then following, they follow the 5 o'clock game. The number one seed Haven is 22-1 against 8 seed Scott City, 16-7. And then on the bottom side of the bracket, also from the North Central Activities Association, Southeast of Saline, the number two seed, 21-2, facing 15-6, 7 seed Burlington at 5 o'clock on field four. And then after that one will be the number three seed, 21-2, Columbus against 17-4, number six seed Rossville at 7 o'clock. A full bracket for state softball can be found at NCKSSports.com. Again, the Beloit Lady Trojans taking on the Santa Fe Trail Lady Chargers here today, and it's a matchup of teams that are 20-3 and 19-3, and clearly when you get to state, those records don't really mean a whole lot, but when you have almost identical records in that 4-5 spot, you would expect a great game. We had a chance to catch up with Beloit's softball coach, Tyler Odell, and he kind of will go over the matchup here and how his team should fare at the state tournament. So here's this interview with Coach Odell of Beloit Lady Trojan Softball. And welcome back here on Katy Country 94. Welcome to the Sports Ticket, joined by Tyler Odell, the head coach of the Beloit Lady Trojan softball team. Coach, getting ready for the state tournament here, and you open out today with Santa Fe Trail. Kind of looking at their team, as you are the number four seed at 20-3. They're 19-3, the number five seed, and I had a chance to maybe see some stats. Obviously, you've probably scouted this team and have them ready to go. The Kaylee Washington's 12-1 this year for them as a pitcher, and leads the team with three home runs with the bat as well. So I know that's probably somebody who has your attention, but overall, as you look at this Santa Fe Trail squad, as you open out state, what are your thoughts on this Lady Chargers team?
Yeah, I think all around they're a really good team. Good matchup for us. You know, I think that they're similar to us in some of the things they do, you know, with strong pitching, and they have some really good hitters also. So, you know, I think it's a tough matchup probably for both of us. And I think, you know, it's kind of strange that we don't play any of the teams they play and they don't play any of the teams we play. So, you never really can get a real good idea of, you know, where you're at. So we play different competition throughout the year. I would say their strength of schedule is probably a little bit more difficult than ours, but I think it should be a really good game.
When you look at a lineup like this and you're taking on, like you just said, a team that you don't really know about except for watching film, but you don't know how good maybe the teams that they're playing are, what are some of the things that you focus on as far as how to attack that and go about it?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've got to get ready for what their pitcher might do that we haven't seen throughout the year. You know, obviously you got to score runs to win, right? So you can't just focus solely on defense, although, you know, you want to make sure your defense is as good as it can be. But hitting, I think, is one of the, you know, and just offense in general, you know, trying to find any little chink in the armor that you can on a team. You know, a team that makes it to state's not going to have very many. So we've been focused a lot this week, you know, just on getting on time with the ball. And, you know, she's going to be faster than what we're used to, you know, so just honing in our ability to hit a quicker pitch.
Obviously, it's a state tournament, so the field is very, very good. All eight teams are very deserving of being here, and the worst record at this tournament is 16-7 in Scott City. But I know you're focused on this Santa Fe Trail game, and you got to get out of that first round. But if you would win, it is still a quick turnaround to play for a 7 o'clock game on Thursday and then 11 o'clock on Friday morning. So how do you go about that scout and understanding who you might be playing next if you should see Haven or Scott City?
Yeah, and you know, both those teams, again, know very little about them. You know, haven't seen hardly anything of them with Scott City or Haven. So, you know, Haven obviously the favorite. Haven's having a great year. I've looked at, you know, their stats, and they're able to score a lot of runs against really good defenses. So I think their offense is really strong. So, you know, trying to figure out a way to slow them down. And then, you know, if an 8 seed gets past a 1 seed, which we have seen quite a bit in 3A, you know, then they're on a roll and they just played one of the best teams. So, you know, trying to be able to handle the momentum that has, you know. But I really feel, you know, this is going to be a really tough game for us. But, you know, I think, you know, we're capable of winning the first game. And whoever does win that, I think, you know, is going to have some good momentum also. So just trying to carry that forward and stay positive.
And this is the second time you guys have made state as a program. 2019 was the last time. What's the vibe like? Is it a lot like 2019, or is this just kind of a different group?
No, I'd say it's very similar to the first time that we made it. I mean, the excitement is there. You know, this is a younger squad than we had then, quite a bit younger, really. And, you know, we had a lot of juniors when we made it the time before, and then 3 seniors. And now we have some seniors and then a lot of sophomores. So they're very excited. And, you know, for being young and being able to go. And so it's similar. But it's a little different also. You know, I think that this group is just got a different kind of energy in the dugout than some of the other teams that we've had. So we're all excited.
Tyler Odle, the head coach of the Bullitt softball team here on the Sports Ticket. Coach, thanks for the time. Best of luck as you start the state tournament here today in Manhattan.
Thank you.
Well, chance to make history. They've got a matchup where it's not as tough as when they were last time at state taking on a juggernaut like Silver Lake. And if they win, then they're guaranteed to play 3. And when you're in state competition, especially when it's basketball or softball or baseball or even, you know, volleyball, you've got to get through the first day. You got to win usually 2 out of your 3 pool play matches. Volleyball's a little bit different, but the key, of course, is just move on to the next day. Do whatever you got to do to survive in advance, and then you're guaranteed to play 3 games, get to be there instead of just real quick, you're there for 1 game and you're done. So it's so nice to win that first game, and Bullitt's trying to do that tonight.
Absolutely, and yeah, it'll be a tough matchup, as you heard Coach Odle talking about there, but one that they feel that they can compete in and win. win and move on to tomorrow. So, yeah, they play again 7 o'clock tonight against Santa Fe Trail there in Manhattan. And then should they win, they'd be back at it at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning against most likely Haven. But we'll see how it all plays out for state softball. Again, that full bracket at ncksports.com.
All right, any other local sports? Have you got that covered?
We got our covered state track and field coming up tomorrow. So we'll kind of preview that tomorrow morning and have that ready for you. We have reports tomorrow and Saturday from state track. So stay tuned for all that coverage as well.
All right. Yesterday when we were on the show, we ended the show with, hey, K-State's down 8-0 in the Big 12 tournament. Well, I've got good news. I got bad news. They lost 16-3 in a run rule in 7 innings. But here's the good news. They're ahead 1-0 in an elimination game today against the number one seed Texas. How did that happen, you ask? Well, the number one seed Texas lost to the 8 seed KU yesterday. KU had a grand slam and won 6-3. So KU is actually playing in the winner's bracket side of things. Texas and K-State, a 9 a.m. start this morning, elimination game in the Big 12 tournament between two of the top 5 teams in the Big 12. TCU will take on KU later today at 4 o'clock in Arlington. Oklahoma State against number 3 West Virginia at 12:30. And Texas Tech against Oklahoma at 7:30. There were lots of upsets yesterday. The 1 seed lost Texas to Kansas. The 2 seed Oklahoma State lost to the 7 seed Oklahoma 9-5. And the 3 seed West Virginia lost to Texas Tech 6-2. The only higher seed that won was TCU against K-State.
Yeah, 4-5.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah, so elimination game today for Oklahoma State and West Virginia, Texas and K-State, and then winner bracket games, TCU, Kansas, Texas Tech, and Oklahoma. If, let's see, I'm pulling it here. If K-State wins today, they would take on the Game 7 loser tomorrow at 3 o'clock. So if K-State wins, they would take on the loser of TCU and Kansas. And if Kansas would win today, they would play on Saturday at 9 a.m. against the winner of if K-State played the Game 7 loser. It gets complicated after a while. But right now, K-State is up 1-0 in the second inning. They're in an elimination game against the 1 seed Texas. Speaking of KU with the big upset over Texas, let's go ahead and shift to basketball, where Kevin McCullough announced that he would return to KU next season. Removed his name from the NBA draft, the return of the redshirt senior fills an immediate hole in the KU roster, especially after Ernest Udeh unexpectedly transferred into the portal and from KU. McCullough is a 2-time Naismith Defensive Player of the Year semifinalist, averaged 11.7 rebounds a year ago, which was 4th in the Big 12 on the rebounding side. Also the only player in the Big 12 to rank in the top 5 in both rebound and steals. Of course, he transferred from Texas Tech. He tested the NBA draft waters, ultimately pulled out of the draft after competing at the NBA Combine earlier this month. Bill Self said, and I quote, "This is a big day for Kansas basketball. We've had a lot of good things happen through recruiting this offseason, but nothing that has transpired this offseason was bigger for KU basketball than having a seasoned veteran like Kevin McCullough return to our program." McCullough, in a release from KU, didn't specifically address his decision to pull out of the draft, but instead expressed his excitement about returning to KU and a team that many believe will be ranked as the preseason number one in the country. McCullough said, and I quote, "How about one more year, Jayhawk Nation, to be able to play in front of the best fans in the country, to play for the best coach in the nation? I truly believe we have the pieces to hang another banner in the fog." So, with McCullough coming back, KU suddenly has 3 of its starters returning from a team that was a 1 seed in the tournament. McCullough, DeJuan Harris, and KJ Adams. You add in 7'1" Michigan transfer Hunter Dickinson, who averaged 17-8 with Michigan a year ago in the Big Ten. And then you focus on all the talent they brought in, Arturo Morris from Texas, Timberlake, a really good shooter from Hofstra as a transfer. They've got a very good high school recruiting class coming in, as they always do. Kansas is a very deep basketball team, and they were already projected to be a top 5 team going into next year. But with McCullough coming back, I didn't think he was coming back because of his age. I just thought, you know, even if he doesn't get drafted, he's going to try to hook on with somebody. But he's deciding to come back. And we've seen this happen year after year for KU, where a guy comes back, like Ochai Agbaji, Ochai Agbaji or Jalen Wilson. They could have gone pro, but they knew they weren't going to be first-round picks necessarily. So they came back, and they enhanced their stock. Jalen Wilson right now is projected to be an early second-round pick. By the way, all you people that think Grady Dick should have come back for a year, he's projected number 9 to the Indiana Pacers, a top 10 pick. So he's making the right decision there. So Kansas loses talent, but they are reloading. They only got... let's see, 3 guys off of last year's team that are going to be back when you think about it. You got, and that's Adams, Harris, and McCuller. And that's just part of the college basketball landscape nowadays, is you're going to have to retool the roster on the fly. And Bill Self said in his press conference, well after the season was over, he said, you know, we're going to take this program to new heights. And it's like, what? You are? Well, on paper, Kansas looks like the best team in America. Now, so did North Carolina. And they didn't even make the tournament last year. Now, I'm not saying KU won't make the tournament. They will with Bill Self. But many times the number one preseason team in the country doesn't win at all. And KU's never been good as front runners. Never been good as front runners. They are in the conference, but not in NCAA tournaments. So I'm okay if Kansas underachieves for the regular season. And they might be a one seed, but they're not the favorite going into the NCAA tournament. And then they'll be okay, because it just, yes, on paper, Kansas looks really, really good. You knew Bill Self would recruit. You knew he'd bring in dudes. He's done that. You know, K-State, there's now some talk that UDay may not go to Duke. It'd be wild if UDay went to K-State. K-State's going to have a formidable team and a lot of talent. Keontae Johnson, by the way, is supposed to find out tomorrow if he's medically cleared for the NBA in the draft. Now, if he isn't, he may come back to Kansas State. And if that happened, boy, K-State's suddenly sitting there going, we're pretty doggone good, too.
Yeah, that'd be great. I got the vibe when he made his statement that he was going to be gone from K-State no matter
what. That's how I felt, too.
Like, I've got the vibe that even if he doesn't get cleared to be in the NBA,
right,
it seems like he was going to go another route.
Yeah.
And maybe I read it wrong.
No, I agree with you.
But that's kind of like, it was like, okay, K-State fans, I love you. Thanks for everything.
Right.
We'll see you down the road. Like,
I agree.
This is like... that's the vibe I got. I hope I'm wrong about that if he does not make it and get cleared to play in the NBA. But it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out, obviously, once he does find out.
Well, for his sake, I hope he gets cleared.
Absolutely,
because
yeah,
he deserves that opportunity.
And somebody's going to make their team better with him on it. I'm going to tell you that right now.
I totally agree with you on that. Let's jump to Patrick Mahomes, and then a couple of big stories I want to touch upon with the Big 12 maybe adding a school and sports gambling, a college student survey that should be alarming to people. But somehow it's not, I guess. But at least Sports Illustrated is catching on. Maybe eventually the major networks will. I'm not holding my breath. But let's talk Chiefs for a moment, because we don't want to spend much time on the Royals. And a lot of people that are Royals fans are Chiefs fans and vice versa. So Patrick Mahomes is paid the 7th highest salary in the National Football League on a per-year average. He has the biggest overall contract still today, a $450 million deal, roughly $500 million. But he's not the highest-paid quarterback per year, and he's going to go even lower on that list to probably 8 or 9 when Herbert gets his deal with the Chargers, even though he's never won a playoff game and been the one. Joe Burrow, who's never won a Super Bowl, Mahomes has won 2 and been the 3. But those guys are going to get paid more than Mahomes on a yearly average basis. And Mahomes knows that. And we've talked about this on the show that, well, first of all, Mahomes isn't over the... I've said this all along. The Chiefs are going to take care of Patrick Mahomes. They've said it publicly. You know the Chiefs are not going to... they don't want a quarterback, their franchise, the face of the league, to be unhappy. They will take care of him. I guarantee they assured him of that when they signed him to the big deal a few years ago, because they know that eventually these deals become old news. And eventually there's other deals that surpass it in regards to per year or sometimes the total amount of the contract. The Chiefs have known this. This is nothing new in sports. And Mahomes knew it too. And you listen to this. Do you think this is a guy that's worried about his contract? And not that anybody's really been saying that he's worried about his contract, but they're the national people, of course, who don't really know what's going on with the Chiefs. All they look at is, oh, Mahomes is the 7th highest paid player in the league. He's going to get a contract extension or redone deal here very soon. Mike Florio, like, it's going to happen, you know, before this season, which it might. I mean, I'm not saying it won't. And I'm okay if it does happen, because it actually might be smarter to do it earlier than later. But eventually they'll have to redo it again in 2 or 3 years, because that's just the way it is. But here's Mahomes asked about his contract situation, which, when you say contract situation, make it sound like he's holding out. He's not. It's just simply, he was very, I thought, candid in his philosophy in regards to the money, the contract, and the team success. Listen very carefully.
Yeah, I mean, I always keep, me and my agent and the team always keep open communication. And we try to do whatever is the best for the team, but obviously I want to do the best for myself as well. But at the same time, I've always said I worry about legacy and winning rings more than making money at this moment. I know we keep communication. We see what's going on around the league. But at the same time, I'll never do anything that's going to hurt us from keeping the great players around me. So it's kind of teetering around that line.
So you're not driven to be the highest paid quarterback average per year. That's not.
No. You just want to do whatever to not hurt other quarterbacks whenever their contracts come up. But you want to kind of keep the bar pushing. It's not about being the highest paid guy. It's not about making a ton of money. I've made enough money where I'll be set for the rest of my life. But at the same time, you got to find that line where you're making a good amount of money, but you're still keeping a lot of great players around you so you can win these Super Bowls and you're able to compete in these games.
Is that a hard line to walk?
Yeah, it is. I think it is for all these guys. And I think you see the guys that are getting paid this last offseason, they're trying to find that right spot. Everybody wants to get paid a lot of money. And whenever they think they're the best at their craft, they want to get paid like that. But at the same time, if you look at the greats in the league, I mean, they find that right spot where they're getting paid a lot of money, but at the same time keeping a lot of these great players around me. And so I understand you look at the team and, you know, you got guys like Chris and Snead and even Travis, all these guys that you need to keep around you to have these great teams. But at the same time, you want to make sure you're taking care of yourself. So we have open communication. I think that's the biggest thing. And you see that from Clark. You see that from Coach Reed. You see that from Veach and everybody. Is we just try to make sure that we have the best team on that football field and everybody gets what they deserve.
Okay, so one of the things that stands out to me that most people will not really look at is towards the end, he says Clark. Coach Reed, and Veach. Listen, if you have problems with the owner, you ain't calling him by the first name, okay?
Mr. Hunt.
Mr. Hunt. Yeah, I was kind of surprised he said Clark, but I'm not. And here's why. Because when you refer to people by their first names, many times it means you're very comfortable with them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, or you have a nickname for them. With Coach Reed, it's the ultimate respect. He says Coach Reed. He doesn't say it Andy. Usually your coaches, you don't call them by first name. I mean, I still to this day, you know, I call Coach Griffith Coach Griffith. I don't call him Brad. You know, so coaches usually, you don't say the first name. You say Coach whatever. The owners, usually you'll say Mr. Whatever, and it's not disrespect that Mahomes said Clark, but I think that shows you how comfortable he is with everybody in the organization. He's comfortable with Brett Veach. He's comfortable with Coach Reed, obviously. He's comfortable with the owner, who he calls Clark, which is his first name. And they have open communication. They did that when they traded Tyreek Hill. They know not to upset the star quarterback, which I think it would take a lot to upset Patrick Mahomes. Like, you know, what would it take to really upset Patrick Mahomes? I think trading Travis Kelce without talking to them would be the first thing that really upset Patrick Mahomes. I mean, I can't think of anything else because, I mean, as he said, I've got enough money. I'm going to be fine. But he did point out that he has a responsibility to the players' union, is what he's referring to. Mm-hmm. He has a responsibility to the other quarterbacks in the league. So this is something that a lot of people, that many people that are listening to the show, maybe don't understand. And Max mentioned this when Mahomes got his big deal. And Max is a loyal listener to the show. And Max is like, oh, dear Lord, what's Wade going to say about me? But what Max had said back then, and I understood his point, was, you know, Mahomes needs to take less for the team for it to work. And there are other people after that big contract are like, oh, you know, Mahomes taking out everything he could from the Chiefs and so forth and so on. And that wasn't true. Yes, the totality of the contract, when you say $500 million, just jumps out and it's like, wow, first guy to ever get that in a contract. And that's what you get focused on. But the Chiefs structured this contract. Mahomes knew that he was going to get stuff prorated or up front with a signing bonus. Things would get restructured. He'd get more guaranteed money as they went, or they'd redo the deal. He did take less. He could have asked for more. He could have went for more. He could have been greedier. And I know that may be hard to believe when he's getting basically a half a billion dollar contract that he signed up for, but he could have demanded more guaranteed money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he could have demanded $250 million to be guaranteed. He did not. And so he's not one that's looking to break the bank per se and say, I'm the greatest player in the league right now, and there's no way that Justin Herbert should be paid more than me or Deshaun Watson, and so that's it. I'm holding out until I get $60 million a year. That's not how he's going about it, because winning is important to him. You heard it in that quote. He wants to win. His legacy isn't going to be how much money he made. His legacy to him is about winning championships, and that's what the greats always focus on. Michael Jordan didn't always get the most money every year he played for the Chicago Bulls. Towards the end, he got paid handsomely.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron, there's been times where he hasn't been the highest paid player in the league, and he's had usually some shorter contracts, which that's smart on his part to maximize his value getting multiple contracts. And the NBA is a little different than the NFL, certainly, with, you know, caps and things like this. But he understands. I mean, Mahomes gets it. He knows that Brady wasn't always the number one paid quarterback in the league. He knows Peyton Manning wasn't always the number one paid quarterback in the league. He notices that those guys didn't hold out. He notices those guys work hard in OTAs and show up. And those are voluntary, by the way. He notices that Brady and Peyton Manning work with their receivers when they had free time. Mahomes has stolen some of these ideas. He's learned from the greats. He's studied the greats. And he has his own thing in Texas working with these receivers. And in some cases, worked with guys that weren't even on the Chiefs team that were college prospects for the NFL draft. Mahomes gets it. And if you think Mahomes is greedy, then you really haven't been paying attention. As he said, I want to get paid. Yes, I mean, everybody wants to get paid. I'm getting paid. He's already got his bag, all right? He's going to be fine, as he put it. But here's the point that Max may have not understood back then that I think he probably understands now. And there's others that probably thought like Max, and maybe some people understand it and some people maybe don't. But Patrick Mahomes has a responsibility to his team. That's true. And his teammates. He has a responsibility to him and his family. That is true. So he needs to get what he thinks is fair for him. But he also has a responsibility for the rest of the league and the players' union. And if Patrick Mahomes does what some people had said, well, you know, I remember the numbers that were thrown out. Mahomes, we got $45 million. He should have taken $35 million per year.
Mm-hmm.
Really? You would take $10 million off the table that is being offered to you? You would say, nah, 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 Kansas City. Clark, Mr. Hunt, Clark, you just hold on to that extra $10 million a year, all right? You just hold on to it. Nobody would do that. Now, Mahomes could have got more than $45 million on average per year, more than likely, if he really pushed it. Could have got more guaranteed money. Didn't. Flexible contract being restructured. Smart. And it paid off last year with what the Chiefs are able to do. Because many people said, you get this big a deal, you just can't win Super Bowls. Well, the Chiefs proved that wrong. A big part of that was trading Tyreek Hill, walking away from that one. Luckily for the Chiefs, that was a blessing in disguise. But here's what people need to understand. When you say Mahomes needs to take less, Mahomes needs to, why doesn't he take $5 or $10 million less and then make it so much better for the team? Well, I could argue he already is, okay, in a way. But at the same time, he's got to have that number be near the top for quarterbacks. There is nobody out there with any sane mind that thinks there's a quarterback better than Patrick Mahomes right now in the National Football League, objectively. You can't sit here and say there's a better quarterback in the league. Mahomes has done more in his first 5 years of starting the league than any quarterback in NFL history. So you could argue he's tracking to be the GOAT. But there's a long way to go to decide all that. He is the best quarterback in the league. It really shouldn't even be debatable. And after he won a Super Bowl last year without Tyreek Hill, I think that cemented it. And I saw a poll question the other day, and I thought, hey, they finally came around and figured it out. It was from either Fox or ESPN saying, who's the second best quarterback in the league? Now, that's a bigger argument. It was a Josh Allen, is a Joe Burrow. I mean, to me, those would be two of the top guys I would think about. Is there Aaron Rodgers? And it's like, okay, we've anointed him. He finally did enough to tell us he's the best quarterback in the league. If he's the best quarterback in the league and he takes $35 million and he's the 25th highest paid quarterback, he has just killed earnings power for his comrades and fellow quarterbacks. And he's also defied the players' union.
Mm-hmm.
He has severely hurt other players' chances of making the money that they feel they deserve. So why would you settle to be the 20th highest paid quarterback when you can be the highest paid quarterback? Know that within a few years you're probably going to fall down that list to 5 or 10 anyway, and then you'll get a restructured deal and you'll probably work your way back up to number 1 or number 2 per year average, and then it'll go back down again. But see, these are the people. Now, Tom Brady never took a gigantic pay cut, okay? He kept it in the realm of what Mahomes is trying to do. He mentioned the balancing act. You don't want to hamstring your team so severely because we need Travis Kelce and Chris Jones and Legarius Sneed, which is interesting. He mentioned Sneed because he's going to be up for a contract here very soon. And he didn't mention Bolton. To me, I'd want Bolton instead of Sneed. But the bottom line is the Chiefs are going to need some kind of flexibility somehow, some way. So Mahomes is trying to find that soft spot, okay? Because he's got to work with the Chiefs because he wants to keep winning rings and add to his legacy, which is awesome. And that's what Brady and Manning did as well. But Brady and Manning also understood, like Mahomes, that I'm going to really lose the respect of the fellow people at my position in this league if I take a dirt cheap deal or even leave money on the table after I've been offered it, because that'll get out.
Mm-hmm.
And Justin Herbert and Josh Allen and Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson and anybody else coming up in the next year or two, Dak Prescott, if Patrick Mahomes would have taken a lot less money and turned money down on the table that was offered, as some people wanted him to do a few years ago, Dak Prescott makes a lot less money. Justin Herbert makes a lot less money for his new deal. Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, it is a trickle-down effect. So as quarterbacks like those, like Herbert and Burrow, they want to see Mahomes being one of the top-paid quarterbacks because he sets the bar, okay? So if Mahomes, everybody pretty much knows he's the best quarterback in the league, he should probably be paid the highest in the league. If Mahomes takes $35 million, like some people wanted to a few years ago instead of $45 million, then all these other quarterbacks, suddenly their earnings power goes down at least $10 million as well per year. And Mahomes is not going to do that to people that he respects and is friends with, and there is a fraternity with quarterbacks. And in some ways it can impact other positions as well when you take less money because of how rosters are structured and so forth and so on. Now, I don't disagree with the premise that quarterbacks make too much money. I won't disagree with that. I would argue wide receivers make too much money sometimes, or Chris Jones makes too much money sometimes, Aaron Donald. But it is the market we live in. It's sports, and it's the National Football League. And if a guy's making $52 million a year, which is what is the average now for, who's the last one? Lamar Jackson and Jalen Hurts.
Mm-hmm.
Hurts is 51, Jackson's 52. Mahomes should be, if they redid the deal, or Mahomes ran up to the Chiefs and said, listen, I'm tired of being not number one anymore, I want to be the highest paid quarterback per year, then he should get $55 to $60 million right now. And the Chiefs, I think, would do it in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat.
Yeah.
But the Chiefs aren't in a hurry to do it because they know Mahomes wants to win. Mahomes is not in a hurry to do it, unlike what Mike Florio thinks, because he wants to put together the best team possible to keep winning championships because he knows he's so smart. He knows that if I continue to win rings, I'm going to make back that little bit of money that I left on the table, per se, but I still made it good enough to where all these other quarterbacks can still get their bags. He knows he's going to make that tenfold in other ways. Merchandise, reinvesting his money into sports franchises, as we talked about the other day, being a minority owner in various sports, endorsement deals, those will keep coming and coming and coming and coming and coming. And he can start demanding more and more for these endorsement deals, say, I'm only going to do 3 or 4 products, but I'm going to charge double. He don't have to worry about alienating other product lines and companies because he don't work for them except for the marketing campaign itself. But he does owe it to the rest of the quarterbacks to keep it, what's the word, in line.
Hmm.
And if he takes a major, significant amount less than he is offered or he is supposed to be paid based on his value, then he is hurting the union and he's hurting his coworkers and employees of the National Football League when it comes to the players, in particular quarterback. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. And that's what he was trying to explain in there is, I'm trying to balance this to where I get my, I'm where I should be and I'm happy, but I don't have to have all the money in the world. I need to make sure my teammates are happy, that they're getting paid, and also that we have a good team so we can keep being in contention to win titles. But at the same time, I have a responsibility to make sure that the market, the value of other guys at quarterback stays in the area it should. So that's the act he has to deal with. And it makes total sense.
Yeah, and teams have to do this all within a salary cap.
You know?
And it's like you just want to say, and you know, I get that, you know, Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, they need to go get theirs, right? And so you're talking about two guys that are going to take up a lot of the percentage of the Eagles and Ravens salary cap, right? And so I think that's when people kind of start missing the boat on it a little bit, is the fact that he has already left money on the table, right?
Right.
And so he could easily have had all that money by now.
Yes.
And probably could have held out a couple times already, even within this contract.
And he very well might not have any rings or any Super Bowl appearances had he done it, or just one.
Yeah, and so when people like Mike Florio start talking about this stuff, they don't care about what the backstory is of a guy, right? To understand that he has already left money on the table so Chris Jones could be a part of this team the first time he had a contract extension.
And by the way, why do these guys care so much that Mahomes is being slighted and being underpaid? Why does it matter to them when he's happy? That's the part I don't get either.
Yeah, like those kind of people that are like just saying, oh, he's going to want to have it done before the season starts and just start putting stuff out there. And
it's disrespectful, like, that he's the seventh highest paid quarterback on average. I mean, that's just made up stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he on average is at 45 and he just won a Super Bowl. I mean, I think that, and what you talked about is what I was going to go to, is like he has already made up all and more of the money he left on the table with his endorsements.
Oh, no question.
And definitely with his investments.
Right.
And so it's like,
and that's where somebody could come back and say, well, then why didn't he take less? Because he can make all that up, as you said. Well, the reason is because of the union and the players.
Yeah, and this is not a new concept of having the right deal to look good for the union or for your other players or for your team, whatever it is.
Right.
Like, people have done this before. It's not something new, but some people just prioritize getting the highest max value of money that they can over continually winning and winning Super Bowls.
Right.
I mean, that's just the case in some spots there. I think that
some people care more about getting
Lamar
paid.
Jackson probably cares more at this point about getting paid because he's not been to the mountaintop yet.
You
know
right.
what I mean? Maybe he thinks that they're not giving me a good enough team to do this, so I'm just going to go get mine, and hopefully they'll find somebody else, and maybe I can get to the pinnacle someday.
Agreed.
But I think there's certain people like that are just like, yeah, give me the money. And you're the one that has to put the team together. I don't care about a salary cap. I don't care about this. Give me mine. Figure the rest of it out.
Yes. Yes.
There's not a lot of quarterbacks that take the route that Mahomes does, saying, give me mine, but don't give me all of mine if we are going to be a worse team because of it.
Yes.
Like, if we're not going to contend for a championship, don't give me all that.
Right.
Leave some of that out there so we can win, because that's what I'm about.
Yes.
And so, you know, I mean, there's going to be guys that have different philosophies, and Patrick Mahomes right now feels like, hey, I want to keep winning.
Well, who could disagree with his philosophy so far?
Exactly.
It's worked out pretty well. 3 Super Bowl appearances, 5 years, 2 MVPs of the Super Bowl, 2 MVPs of the regular season, 2-1 in the Super Bowl, never had to play a road playoff game, which people, I've still, listen, you're not a very smart football fan when you use that against Patrick Mahomes as an argument. Well, he's never had to win a road playoff game, because he's so damn good, he doesn't have to, because he actually values the regular season, unlike some quarterbacks that are actually great, great players and some of the best of all time. I mean, they put a premium on, we're going to get a bye, or we're going to get the first round game at home. We're going to win our division. We're not settling for a wild card. There's a reason that Mahomes has never played a road game, because he's so good and the Chiefs are so good. I mean, how is that a knock on a guy? I mean, that just cracks me up. If he did go on the road and lose one game, he'd get vilified. Oh, he lost the road game. Well, see, he's not that great. Well, yeah, but, you know, the problem was he wasn't good enough for the whole year because they had to have a road game. So that cracks me up, too. But Mahomes, listen, the Chiefs fans, including myself, need to just pinch ourselves over and over and over. We've got, I hate to say the word perfect, but right now he seems to be the perfect quarterback. He understands at a young age. He understood at a very young age when he even was drafted. He immediately was a leader in the locker room. He sat and didn't whine about being behind Alex Smith for 1 year to learn behind him. Mahomes, what has he done wrong? Can you give me any example of what he's done wrong? He's never made a misstep anywhere that I know of. He has not. And if you want to use his brother against him, that's not Patrick Mahomes' fault. He's not responsible for his brother. His brother's a big boy, an adult. So there's nothing to knock on Mahomes. I mean, I can't think of. I mean, nobody. I've never heard anybody say they had a horrible encounter with him or he was mean. He just seems like the chosen one. He does, and I think that alienates and upsets people that aren't Chiefs fans. And I understand it because, you know, everybody, oh, Tom Brady's so great. You know, well, yeah, must be nice when you have great defenses or you have great coach. And then the same guy, oh, yeah, Mahomes is great, but what would he do without Tyreek Hill? Oh, win a ring. Oh, well, yeah, but he's got Kelsey. I mean, that must be nice. And Andy Reid. Andy Reid didn't win a ring before Patrick Mahomes. Oh, Kelsey didn't win a ring before Patrick Mahomes. But, yeah, but Chris Jones didn't win a ring. Well, he's got this talent around him. Go look at any Super Bowl champion. They always have talent around them. It ain't just Peyton Manning and Tom Brady doing it all by themselves. Last I checked, they don't actually throw and catch the ball and tackle. So it's just kind of idiotic, some of the things that people want to do to tear people down. And Mahomes, I mean, he is just, it's almost like he's too good to be true. And I love it. As a Chiefs fan, you love it.
It started on day one. I mean, he left money on the table his rookie year because he wouldn't do marketing because he wasn't the starting quarterback. I'm not going to steal Alex Smith's spotlight. This is his team.
And
he had multiple offers for marketing, and that he's like, no, I'm not going to do it yet.
And he gave respect.
And he bet on himself a little bit there, too,
sure,
obviously, knowing that he was going to get his chance. I don't know if he knew it was going to be right away the second year, but...
Oh, I'm pretty sure
And I'm guessing he did,
yeah,
but...
From everything I know, it was that.
But, you know, to get that big of a chance right away to succeed like he did right away was, I think, the thing that might have even surprised himself. I don't know, but it was. I mean, it's a guy that has continually done pretty much the right thing ever since he's been in the league.
Absolutely. And so you're just waiting for that one day where the something... not even really that controversial, happens. And you're like, oh, my gosh, see, he's not perfect. And they'll just, everybody will pile on because that's how great he seems to be. All right, let's shift to two other things before we get done with the ticket today. A Big 12 source has told a writer from the Oklahoman that Colorado is ready to commit to joining the Big 12 soon. Now, I mentioned this a few months ago on our show, that I had a birdie tell me that Colorado was pretty much set on coming. It just takes some time, I think, and to play this out the right way. Now, this is not a done deal, but I've thought all along, especially, I've always thought they're going to come back. But from various people that I know, I feel pretty confident it's going to happen. And now, of course, we're getting closer to where it may very actually happen. Lots of talk during realignment craze era of college sports. But this comment being reported by this writer who's well-respected, he's not like Mike Florio. He ain't going to just throw something, hope it sticks. But in combination with what we've seen recently, Washington State President Kirk Schultz on Monday, remember him, he used to be at K-State, issued a variety of spending freezes in the wake of the Pac-12's financial crisis. The New York Post reported that ESPN and the Pac-12 are having no substantive talks about extending the league's TV contract, which expires next summer. Plus, CBS reported a couple weeks ago that Big 12 officials were told by ESPN that the Big 12 would be one of the three leagues, along with the SEC and the ACC, that ESPN would air in terms of a Tier 1 level. The four corner schools, Arizona State and Utah, are the Pac-12 schools most mentioned as Big 12 candidates for expansion. Arizona seems like a prominent Big 12 candidate. Brett Yarmark likes the fact that they've been prominent in basketball and so forth and so on. Utah seems to be the most reluctant of the four schools. But the one that seems to be the most supportive and really welcoming the idea is Colorado. And we've known this for a while. It only takes one school from the remaining Pac-12 to create a domino effect. If Colorado, which also faces financial dilemmas with its athletic department, jumps, others are expected to follow. In Pullman, Washington this week, Wichita State. Washington State, well, I see WSU, I think, Wichita State. Mm-hmm. Washington State President Schultz announced that his school would place a temporary freeze on all current and future vacant positions until further review, as well as a pause on non-essential travel, purchases, and new professional development because of significant decrease in Pac-12 revenue distribution as a result of overpayments from one of the conference media partners that must be resolved. The Pac-12 network overpaid about $50 million to the conference members, money which must be returned. In addition, Schultz said the Pac-12 headquarters relocation out of San Francisco cost more than anticipated. The Pac-12 had hoped that ESPN would be their saving grace, their knight in shining armor, getting involved, and they simply haven't. ESPN's tightening its belt. As we talked about yesterday, they are having another set of layoffs. They've had many over the last few years. New York Post has reported that ESPN has passed on the Big Ten. They passed on Sunday Ticket. They passed on Premier League. They passed on Champions League and Major League Soccer. So the idea it will be completely out on Pac-12 is not in the least a bit surprising. So, there are many reasons why some schools would consider going to the Big 12. The question is, which schools do the Big 12 want the most? And it certainly does sound like those are the four: Utah, Arizona, Arizona State, and Colorado. I have still said, and I think Brett Yormark is I want to say he's a genius, because so far he's done about everything right. Mm-hmm. It was an absolute brilliant move that saved and changed the landscape for the Pac-12 and the Big 12 when he went early back to the table with ESPN and TV partners, said, let's work on something right now. Let's not wait. That's called proactivity, people, instead of being reactive, which has been a problem with the Big 12 for many years. It's been a problem for Major League Baseball many years. And when you are stagnant, when you are reactive, you are bound to get lapped by the competition. Brett Yormark, for once, the Big 12 lapped the competition. And the competition is the Pac-12. The Big 12 went to the Pac-12 and said, hey, let's work up on a merger. How about we merge together? The Pac-12 didn't want that. Well, now they're in deep, deep trouble. Mm. Financial problems. And I still think Brett Yormark, I would not be stunned. I am telling you this right now. I would not be stunned if Oregon joins the Big 12. I would not be stunned by this, because if the Big Ten doesn't want to, well, they are kind of like greedy. If the Big Ten isn't ready to expand any more than they are now, and they're happy with everything, where does Oregon fall if the Pac-12 starts to dissolve? Now, is the Pac-12 good enough to stay alive if Colorado departs and everybody else stays? Yeah, but you know who the anchor tenant is? It's Oregon, because USC and UCLA are leaving for the Big Ten, so. I think there's a possibility that there's a card up the sleeve of Brett Yormark, and I have still felt like, where does Oregon fall in this whole thing? If the Pac-12 does fall apart, where do they go? And if you're going to tell me the Big Ten, geographically, I don't know if that's a heck of a lot better than the Big 12. But money wise, if Oregon was, you know, guaranteed a equal piece of the pie of the Big 12, a Big 10 contract, then yes, that'll be more than the Big 12. But that would be huge. And we've been talking about four time zones. That's what we keep hearing over and over. San Diego State's one that's being mentioned as an addition to the Pac-12. If the Pac-12 would lose somebody, the Big 12's actually been talking to San Diego State. They may actually get them to come to the Big 12 instead of the Pac-12, and there would be your fourth time zone. So I think there's lots of things, moving parts behind the scenes that, of course, we don't know, like we don't normally. But Colorado seems to be the one that would be willing to be the first one to jump in with both feet off the diving board and return to the Big 12. And I would say to that, you are welcome back. You know, Missouri did some things that I don't, would the Big 12 welcome them back? I don't know. Nebraska, I think there's a lot of sore feelings there, but I think Big 12 would bring back Nebraska. I think Nebraska and Colorado, they would do that. A&M, no. Missouri, no. Of course, A&M's not had that history of the Big 12 or the Big 8 days. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'd love to have Nebraska and Colorado back. Nebraska's not going to happen. They're in a much better financial situation. But you bring Colorado in the fray with Deion Sanders, the head coach, if he stays here in a few years, if the Colorado would join the league in a few years, we're on to something here. I mean, Colorado was great in football there for a while. Mm-hmm. And they won a championship under Bill McCarty. So, The basketball program is not horrible, but it's not about basketball. It's about football. So just your quick thoughts, Colorado coming to the Big 12. To me, it makes complete sense.
Well, the logical first school from the Pac-12 to come to the Big 12 would be Colorado.
Yeah. I mean,
just as a trajectory goes to the West, and you move that way.
And you got
and
BYU.
You got BYU in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And so now it's Colorado, and I think then the next would be Utah.
Yes.
To counter BYU. And then, probably Arizona and Arizona State are probably going to be bringing you maybe more financially than those two schools. Mm-hmm. But the logical moves for those teams to go ahead and move first would be, I think, Colorado and Utah.
I agree.
But, Colorado, I've thought for a while that Colorado is going to make their way back here.
Yes.
Just even the way they're performing in the Pac-12, and it just stopped. There's a point where it just stops making sense logically for them to be there.
To stay, all right.
And so that's, for me, I think that's where we're headed. And, you know, if you can get all four of those at Oregon, that'd be great.
Oh, I'd take that too. All right, last thing I want to touch upon, and I'm not going to spend much time on it because we've spent some time on this, but this adds to the argument or discussion that I've had for quite some time. If you're a loyal listener to the show, you know where I'm going here. But yesterday, there was a report and story that came out about a college student survey in regards to college sports gambling. And NCAA infractions cases have centered on sports wagering, and those cases are spiking right now, according to the association's vice president, if I can talk, John Duncan. The NCAA released a study yesterday that underscored why they are worried about gambling in college athletics. Listen to this very carefully. A survey of more than 3,500 college students ages 18 to 22 found that sports wagering is pervasive. 58% of those surveyed have engaged in at least one sports betting activity. The survey said that 67% of students living on campus are bettors and tend to bet at a higher frequency. That means two out of every three students that live on campus are betting. 41% of college students who bet on sports have placed a bet on their school's teams. 35% have used a student bookmaker. The survey indicates that gambling advertisers are targeting colleges. 63% of on-campus students recall seeing betting ads, which is a higher rate than the general population of those who commute virtually or attend college that way. 58% of those students surveyed indicate they are more likely to bet after seeing those ads. 16% have engaged in at least one risky gambling behavior, and 6% report that they have previously lost in more than $500 on sports betting in a single day. Remember, they're college students. 70% of the risky gamblers believe consistent sports gambling will increase their monetary earnings. That's not good. The survey's parameters for risky gamblers include those who place larger than typical bets at a greater frequency and across a broader range of sports. Now, you may say, well, what's the big deal? College students, if they get the grant money, loan money, whatever, I mean, it's their money. Once they have it, they can do what they want. And mom and dad give them money. They make money working as a bartender or waiter, waitress, whatever the case may be. Of course, you need to be 21 to be a bartender. But it's their money, right? Yeah, but the problem is that the consequences are severe when it comes to NCAA rules and athletics. Duncan says you can throw a net and get any number of schools right now. There are three publicly known gambling-related cases in the pipeline. We've talked about it before on the show. Alabama, with their baseball coach being fired. Iowa and Iowa State, there's investigations into them. 26 Hawkeyes, 15 Cyclones, according to reports, are suspected of violating NCAA gambling rules. There was a story that came out yesterday that there are a couple of staff members of the Cincinnati, I believe it was, baseball team. They've been fired because of some things like this. The NCAA rules on sports wagering are clear. Athletes, coaches, and staff are prohibited from betting on amateur, collegiate, and professional sports in which the NCAA conducts a championship. Betting by any athlete, regardless of their sport, on the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, or Major League Baseball would be a violation, as would wagering on college competitions. There's also potential criminal concerns if athletes are younger than the legal betting age in their state or engaging in interstate or offshore gambling. Duncan says that gambling cases often are easily investigated in an era when more sports wagering is legal and regulated. There's usually a pretty clear paper trail, he says, left by IP addresses, timestamps, and other data that comes with electronic wagering. We can figure out who's betting, when, how much they're wagering, and how often. It's not that hard. The NCAA's strict stance on sports gambling is hard to miss. Almost every athletic department has posters in its facilities warning that wagering is against the rules. Many college administrators are vocally in favor of maintaining the current widespread prohibition and major sanctions for those who violate the NCAA bylaws. Dusty had run to the other room, but I'll repeat a couple of the numbers in case people missed it. A survey of more than 3,500 18 to 22-year-old college students found that sports wagering is pervasive. 58% have engaged in at least one sports betting activity. 67% of students who live on campus, or two out of every three students living on campus, are bettors, tend to bet at a higher frequency. 41% of college students who bet on sports have placed a bet on their school's team. 35% have used a student bookmaker, because there are student bookies. 63% of on-campus students recall seeing betting ads, and which is higher rate than the general population. 58% of those students indicate they're more likely to bet after seeing those ads. And here's the scary part. 16% have engaged in at least one risky gambling behavior, and 6% report that they have lost more than $500 on sports betting in a single day. 70% of the risky gamblers believe consistent sports gambling will increase their earnings. But we don't have a problem here. Nothing to see. Just legalize it all. Every state. Legalize it. Make it happen. It's their choice. There's one comment stands out to me as well, and that's John Duncan, who's the NCAA Vice President of Enforcement. He says, and I quote, "You can throw a net and get any number of schools. They're hot right now. And the paper trail is very easy." So I've been saying this now, and it just keeps adding to my argument. And I wish I could see the crystal ball for lottery numbers as I've seen this. And I've said it 1,000 times. I'll say it one more time. This is the tip of the iceberg. When you hear a comment like that, well, it's just Alabama and Iowa and Iowa State. There's just three cases. I mean, it's not that big a deal. No, there's three cases that are documented that are being investigated. Trust me, there are tons of other investigations taking place. There are things that are being monitored, and there are severe consequences, in particular for these athletes. There are severe consequences for just students betting that aren't athletes, because they go broke or they lose money. They get depressed because they have no money, or they blew the money sports gambling. They become addicted to sports gambling at a young age. There are many things to be worried about with this study and this survey. And yet again, it's something that seems to be under the radar. Sports Illustrated, Pat Ford came out with this article yesterday talking about this survey. At least there's a big time sports publication that's really starting to spend some time on this. And as I said, it's the tip of the iceberg. When John Duncan says you can throw a net and get any number of schools, they're hot right now. The analogy is pretty simple. You just go ahead and throw a net in the lake and you're going to get a whole bunch of fish. No matter how good the net is, don't matter where you throw the net, I'm going to catch him. That's his analogy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure he's right. So
you're no longer dealing with paper trails here. You're dealing with digital footprints.
Well, that's what he said, IP addresses.
Yeah, that are easy to find. Yep. They literally have to be easy to find, because you have to have a location on to make a bet. And so it's so much easier. I mean, how do you think like crimes get solved so much quicker these days than like the serial cases back in the 70s, right?
Yeah,
like,
oh, yeah.
There's so much information, and there's so many cameras, there's so many GPS locators. Everybody's like, there's a GPS locator on my phone. Duh, it's in your phone. Yeah, they can figure out where you're at if they really want to. It's just like, it's, you have a GPS in your pocket almost every day.
Yes.
And so it's like, there's so much that's so much easier to find and do, and this is at the top of the list of the easiest to find out what's going on.
Well, and you might have missed it, but what John Duncan did say as well, he says these are easily investigated because of sports wagering is legal and regulated. There's usually a pretty clear paper trail left by IP addresses, timestamps, and other data that comes when electronically wagering. We can figure out who is betting, when, how much, and how often.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Absolutely.
So all these clever people that think they're going to... the only way you're going to get around it, I guess, is using somebody else to do it for you. But there's still going to be some kind of trail,
which
eventually.
Is fraud with the government.
That's government. That's
cringe. That's because it's legalized.
That's what I'm saying.
It's just not just fraud with some overseas company. Right. You're now dealing with government fraud.
Yeah. Now you're bringing crime into the situation. Absolutely. So, you know, once again, is it worth it? That's what I ask. And, you know, according to some of these students, 70% of the risky gamblers believe it's going to increase their earnings. So they do believe that it's worth it and mm-hmm. worth the risk. And that's scary. And that's very scary for the younger population. And, you know, kids my own son's age, you know, and the future generations of kids is, it's so easy to, you know, people talk about how easy it is to access drugs, right? So it's easier to access things than you used to be able to do back in your and my day. It's easier to access this on social media. It's easier for these bad things to happen. There's good things and bad things with technology and electronics and whatever the case may be in social media. But this is another one of those where, hey, you know, it's easier to get marijuana. It's easier to get drugs than it used to be. It's and people don't even understand, even North Central Kansas, how prominent drugs are in our society. I'm telling you, there are a lot of people with their head in the sand. Trust me on that. And you know, you can run to Colorado and you legally can have marijuana, and you can, in Kansas, you can legally sports bet as long as you're of age. And what you have now is a lot of things that are legal but can get you in trouble nonetheless, mm-hmm. in particular when you're an athlete or a student on campus. And just one more thing for those students to worry about, and the last thing you want is your kid going to school and then happen to go to, you know, rehab because of gambling addiction. But we've also seen college students have alcohol addictions too. Mm-hmm. And so we'll continue to follow it, but those numbers kind of scary. And this is just in the early part of sports betting being legalized.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there are many other states that are thinking about it or will eventually legalize it, and this will become even more of a problem, and thus adds to my "this is the tip of the iceberg" argument.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.